sacrifices. Open still remaineth the earth for great souls. Empty are still many sites for lone ones and twain ones, around which floateth the odour of tranquil seas. Open still remaineth a free life for great souls. Verily, he who possesseth little is so much the less possessed. Blessed be moderate poverty. There, where the state ceaseth, there only commenceth the man who is not superfluous. There commenceth the song of the necessary ones, the single and irreplaceable melody. There, where the state ceaseth, pray look thither, my brethren. Do ye not see it? The rainbow and the bridges of the Superman. Thus spake Zarathustra. 12. The Flies in the Marketplace. Flee, my friend, into thy solitude. I see thee deafened with the noise of the great men, and stung all over with the stings of the little ones. Admirably do forest and rock know how to be silent with thee. Resemble again the tree which thou lovest, the broad-branched one. Silently and attentively it o'erhangeth the sea. Where solitude endeth, there beginneth the marketplace, and where the marketplace beginneth, there beginneth also the noise of the great actors, and the buzzing of the poison flies. In the world even the best things are worthless without those who represent them, those representers the people call great men. Little do the people understand what is great, that is to say, the creating agency, but they have a taste for all representers and actors of great things. Around the devisers of new values revolveth the world. Invisibly it revolveth. But around the actors revolve the people and the glory. Such is the course of things. Spirit hath the actor, but little conscience of the spirit. He believeth always in that wherewith he maketh believe most strongly, in himself. Tomorrow he hath a new belief, and the day after one still newer. Sharp perceptions hath he, like the people, and changeable humours. To upset, that meaneth with him to prove. To drive mad, that meaneth with him to convince. And blood is counted by him as the best of all arguments. A truth which only glideth into fine ears he calleth falsehood and trumpery. Verily he believeth only in gods that make a great noise in the world. Full of clattering buffoons is the marketplace, and the people glory in their great men. These are for them the masters of the hour. But the hour presseth them, so they press thee, and also from thee they want yea or nay. Alas, thou wouldst set thy chair betwixt for and against. On account of those absolute and impatient ones, be not jealous, thou lover of truth. Never yet did truth cling to the arm of an absolute one. On account of those abrupt ones, return into thy security. Only in the marketplace is one assailed by yea or nay. Slow is the experience of all deep fountains. Long have they to wait until they know what hath fallen into their depths. Away from the marketplace and from fame taketh place all that is great. Away from the marketplace and from fame have ever dwelt the devisers of new values. Flee, my friend, into thy solitude. I see thee stung all over by the poisonous flies. Flee thither where a rough, strong breeze bloweth. Flee into thy solitude. Thou hast lived too closely to the small and the pitiable. Flee from their invisible vengeance. Towards thee they have nothing but vengeance. Raise no longer an arm against them. Innumerable are they, and it is not thy lot to be a fly-flap. Innumerable are the small and pitiable ones, and of many a proud structure raindrops and weeds have been the ruin. Thou art not stone, but already hast thou become hollow by the numerous drops. Thou wilt yet break and burst by the numerous drops. Exhausted I see thee by poisonous flies, Bleeding I see thee, and torn at 100 spots, and thy pride will not even upbraid. Blood they would have from thee in all innocence, blood their bloodless souls crave for, and they sting, therefore, in all innocence. But thou, profound one, thou sufferest too profoundly even from small wounds, and ere thou hadst recovered, the same poison worm crawled over thy hand. Too proud art thou to kill these sweet tooths, but take care lest it be thy fate to suffer all their poisonous injustice. They buzz around thee also with their praise. Obtrusiveness is their praise. They want to be close to thy skin and thy blood. They flatter thee, as one flattereth a god or devil. They whimper before thee, as before a god or devil. What doth it come to? Flatterers are they, and whimperers, and nothing more. Often also do they show themselves to thee as amiable ones, but that hath ever been the prudence of the cowardly. Yea, the cowardly are wise. They think much about thee with their circumscribed souls. Thou art always suspected by them. Whatever is much thought about is, at last, thought suspicious. They punish thee for all thy virtues. They pardon thee in their inmost hearts only for thine errors. Because thou art gentle and of upright character, thou sayest, blameless are they for their small existence. But their circumscribed souls think, blameable is all great existence. Even when thou art gentle towards them, they still feel themselves despised by thee, and they repay thy beneficence with secret maleficence. Thy silent pride is always counter to their taste. They rejoice if once thou be humble enough to be frivolous. What we recognize in a man, we also irritate in him. Therefore be on your guard against the small ones. In thy presence they feel themselves small, and their baseness gleameth and gloweth against thee in invisible vengeance. Sawest thou not how often they became dumb when thou approachedst them, and how their energy left them like the smoke of an extinguishing fire? Yea, my friend, the bad conscience art thou of thy neighbours, for they are unworthy of thee. Therefore they hate thee and would fain suck thy blood. Thy neighbours will always be poisonous flies. What is great in thee? That itself must make them more poisonous, and always more fly-like. Flee, my friend, into thy solitude, and thither where a rough, strong breeze bloweth. It is not thy lot to be a fly-flap. Thus spake Zarathustra. 13. Chastity. I love the forest. It is bad to live in cities. There are too many of the lustful. Is it not better to fall into the hands of a murderer than into the dreams of a lustful woman? And just look at these men. Their eyes saith it. They know nothing better on earth than to lie with a woman. Filth is at the bottom of their souls, and alas, if their filth hath still spirit in it. Would that ye were perfect, at least as animals. But to animals belongeth innocence. Do I counsel you to slay your instincts? I counsel you to innocence in your instincts. Do I counsel you to chastity? Chastity is a virtue with some, but with many almost a vice. These are continent, to be sure, but doggish lust looketh enviously out of all that they do. Even into the heights of their virtue and into their cold spirit doth this creature follow them with its discord. And how nicely can doggish lust beg for a piece of spirit when a piece of flesh is denied it? Ye love tragedies and all that breaketh the heart, but I am distrustful of your doggish lust. Ye have two cruel eyes, and ye look wantonly towards the sufferers. Hath not your lust just disguised itself and taken the name of fellow suffering? And also, this parable give I unto you. Not a few who meant to cast out their devil went thereby into the swine themselves. To whom chastity is difficult, It is to be dissuaded, lest it become the road to hell, to filth and lust of soul. Do I speak of filthy things? That is not the worst thing for me to do. Not when the truth is filthy, but when it is shallow, doth the discerning one go unwillingly into its waters. Verily, there are chaste ones from their very nature. They are gentler of heart, and laugh better and oftener than you. They laugh also at chastity and ask, What is chastity? Is chastity not folly? But the folly came unto us, and not we unto it. We offered that guest harbour and heart, now it dwelleth with us. Let it stay as long as it will. Thus spake Zarathustra. 14. The Friend. One is always too many about me, thinketh the anchorite. Always once one, that maketh two in the long run. I and me are always too earnestly in conversation. How could it be endured if there were not a friend? The friend of the anchorite is always the third one. The third one is the cork which preventeth the conversation of the two sinking into the depth. Ah, there are too many depths for all anchorites. Therefore do they long so much for a friend, and for his elevation. Our faith in others betrayeth wherein we would fain have faith in ourselves. Our longing for a friend is our betrayer. And often with our love we want merely to overleap envy, and often we attack and make ourselves enemies to conceal that we are vulnerable. Be at least mine enemy. Thus speaketh the true reverence, which doth not venture to solicit friendship. If one would have a friend, then must one also be willing to wage war for him, and in order to wage war, one must be capable of being an enemy. One ought still to honour the enemy in one's friend. Canst thou go nigh unto thy friend and not go over to him? In one's friend one shall have one's best enemy. Thou shalt be closest unto him with thy heart when thou withstandest him. Thou wouldst wear no raiment before thy friend? It is in honour of thy friend that thou showest thyself to him as thou art, but he wisheth thee to the devil on that account. He who maketh no secret of himself shocketh. So much reason have ye to fear nakedness. Aye, if ye were gods, ye could then be ashamed of clothing. Thou canst not adorn thyself fine enough for thy friend, for thou shalt be unto him an arrow and a longing for the Superman. Sawest thou ever thy friend asleep, to know how he looketh? What is usually the countenance of thy friend? It is thine own countenance in a coarse and imperfect mirror. Sawest thou ever thy friend asleep? Wert thou not dismayed at thy friend looking so? O my friend, man is something that hath to be surpassed. In divining and keeping silence shall the friend be a master. Not everything must thou wish to see. Thy dream shall disclose unto thee what thy friend doeth when awake. Let thy pity be a divining, to know first if thy friend wanteth pity. Perhaps he loveth in thee the unmoved eye and the look of eternity. Let thy pity for thy friend be hid under a hard shell. Thou shalt bite out a tooth upon it. Thus will it have delicacy and sweetness. Art thou pure air and solitude and bread and medicine to thy friend? Many a one cannot loosen his own fetters, but is nevertheless his friend's emancipator. Art thou a slave? Then thou canst not be a friend. Art thou a tyrant? Then thou canst not have friends. Far too long hath there been a slave and a tyrant concealed in woman. On that account woman is not yet capable of friendship. She knoweth only love. In woman's love there is injustice and blindness to all she doth not love. And even in woman's conscious love there is still always surprise and lightning and night, along with the light. As yet woman is not capable of friendship. Women are still cats and birds, or at the best, cows. As yet woman is not capable of friendship. But tell me, ye men, who of you are capable of friendship? Oh, your poverty, ye men, and your sordidness of soul! As much as ye give to your friend will I give even to my foe, and will not have become poorer thereby. There is comradeship. May there be friendship. Thus spake Zarathustra. 15. The 1001 Goals. Many lands saw Zarathustra, and many peoples. Thus he discovered the good and bad of many peoples. No greater power did Zarathustra find on earth than good and bad. No people could live without first valuing. If a people will maintain itself, however, it must not value as its neighbour valueth. Much that passed for good with one people was regarded with scorn and contempt by another. Thus I found it. Much found I here called bad, which was there decked with purple honours. Never did one neighbour understand the other. Ever did his soul marvel at his neighbour's delusion and wickedness. A table of excellencies hangeth over every people. Lo, it is the table of their triumphs. Lo, it is the voice of their will to power. It is laudable what they think hard. What is indispensable and hard they call good, and what relieveth in the direst distress, the unique and hardest of all, they extol as holy. Whatever maketh them rule and conquer and shine, to the dismay and envy of their neighbours, they regard as the high and foremost thing, the test and the meaning of all else. Verily, my brother, if thou knewest but a people's need, its land, its sky, and its neighbour, then wouldst thou divine the law of its surmountings, and why it climbeth up that ladder to its hope. Always shalt thou be the foremost and prominent above others. No one shall thy jealous soul love except a friend. That made the soul of a Greek thrill. Thereby went he his way to greatness. To speak truth and be skilful with bow and arrow. So seemed it alike pleasing and hard to the people from whom cometh my name, the name which is alike pleasing and hard to me. To honour father and mother, and from the root of the soul to do their will, this table of surmounting hung another people over them, and became powerful and permanent thereby. To have fidelity, and for the sake of fidelity to risk honour and blood, even in evil and dangerous courses, teaching itself so, another people mastered itself, and thus mastering itself, became pregnant and heavy with great hopes. Verily, men have given unto themselves all their good and bad. Verily, they took it not. They found it not. It came not unto them as a voice from heaven. Values did man only assign to things in order to maintain himself. He created only the significance of things, a human significance. Therefore calleth he himself man, that is, the valuator. Valuing is creating. Hear it, ye creating ones. Valuation itself is the treasure and jewel of the valued things. Through valuation only is there value, and without valuation the nut of existence would be hollow. Hear it, ye creating ones. Change of values, that is, change of the creating ones. Always doth he destroy who hath to be a creator. Creating ones were first of all peoples, and only in late times individuals. Verily, the individual himself is still the latest creation. Peoples once hung over them tables of the good, love which would rule, and love which would obey, created for themselves such tables. Older is the pleasure in the herd than the pleasure in the ego, and as long as the good conscience is for the herd, the bad conscience only saith ego. Verily the crafty ego, the loveless one, that seeketh its advantage in the advantage of many, it is not the origin of the herd, but its ruin. Loving ones was it always, and creating ones that created good and bad. Fire of love gloweth in the names of all the virtues, and fire of wrath. Many lands saw Zarathustra, and many peoples. No greater power did Zarathustra find on earth than the creations of the loving ones. Good and bad are they called. Verily a prodigy is this power of praising and blaming. Tell me, ye brethren, who will master it for me? Who will put a fetter upon the thousand necks of this animal? 1,000 goals have there been hitherto, for 1,000 peoples have there been. Only the fetter for 1,000 necks is still lacking. There is lacking the one goal. As yet humanity hath not a goal. But pray tell me, my brethren, if the goal of humanity be still lacking, is there not also still lacking humanity itself? Thus spake Zarathustra. 16. Neighbor love. Ye crowd around your neighbor and have fine words for it. But I say unto you, your neighbor love is your bad love of yourselves. Ye flee unto your neighbor from yourselves, and would fain make a virtue thereof, but I fathom your unselfishness. The thou is older than the I. The thou hath been consecrated, but not yet the I. So man presseth nigh unto his neighbor. Do I advise you to neighbor love? Rather do I advise you to neighbor flight and to furthest love. Higher than love to your neighbor is love to the furthest and future ones. Higher still than love to men is love to things and phantoms. The phantom that runneth on before thee, my brother, is fairer than thou. Why dost thou not give unto it thy flesh and thy bones? But thou fearest and runnest unto thy neighbor. Ye cannot endure it with yourselves, and do not love yourselves sufficiently. So ye seek to mislead your neighbor into love, and would fain gild yourselves with his error. Would that ye could not endure it with any kind of near ones, or their neighbors. Then would ye have to create your friend and his overflowing heart out of yourselves. Ye call in a witness when ye want to speak well of yourselves, and when ye have misled him to think well of you, ye also think well of yourselves. Not only doth he lie, who speaketh contrary to his knowledge, but more so, he who speaketh contrary to his ignorance. And thus speak ye of yourselves in your intercourse, and belie your neighbor with yourselves. Thus saith the fool, association with men spoileth the character, especially when one hath none. The one goeth to his neighbor because he seeketh himself, and the other because he would fain lose himself. Your bad love to yourselves maketh solitude a prison to you. The furthest ones are they who pay for your love to the near ones, and when there are but 5 of you together, a 6th must always die. I love not your festivals either. Too many actors found I there, and even the spectators often behaved like actors. Not the neighbor do I teach you, but the friend. Let the friend be the festival of the earth to you, and a foretaste of the Superman. I teach you the friend and his overflowing heart, but one must know how to be a sponge if one would be loved by overflowing hearts. I teach you the friend in whom the world standeth complete, a capsule of the good, the creating friend, who hath always a complete world to bestow. And as the world unrolled itself for him, so rolleth it together again for him in rings, as the growth of good through evil, as the growth of purpose out of chance. Let the future and the furthest be the motive of thy today. In thy friend shalt thou love the Superman as thy motive. My brethren, I advise you not to neighbor love. I advise you to furthest love. Thus spake Zarathustra. 17. The Way of the Creating One. Wouldst thou go into isolation, my brother? Wouldst thou seek the way unto thyself? Tarry yet a little and hearken unto me. He who seeketh may easily get lost himself. All isolation is wrong. So say the herd. and long didst thou belong to the herd. The voice of the herd will still echo in thee, and when thou sayest, I have no longer a conscience in common with you, then will it be a plaint and a pain. Lo, that pain itself did the same conscience produce, and the last gleam of that conscience still gloweth on thine affliction. But thou wouldst go the way of thine affliction, which is the way unto thyself? Then show me thine authority and thy strength to do so. Art thou a new strength and a new authority, a first motion, a self-rolling wheel? Canst thou also compel stars to revolve around thee? Alas, there is so much lusting for loftiness. There are so many convulsions of the ambitions. Show me that thou art not a lusting and ambitious one. Alas, there are so many great thoughts that do nothing more than the bellows. They inflate and make emptier than ever. Free dost thou call thyself? Thy ruling thought would I hear of, and not that thou hast escaped from a yoke. Art thou one entitled to escape from a yoke? Many a one hath cast away his final worth when he hath cast away his servitude. Free from what? What doth that matter to Zarathustra? Clearly, however, shall thine eyes show unto me free for what? Canst thou give unto thyself thy bad and thy good, and set up thy will as a law over thee? Canst thou be judge for thyself, and avenger of thy law? Terrible is aloneness with the judge and avenger of one's own law. Thus is a star projected into desert space, and into the icy breath of aloneness. Today sufferest thou still from the multitude, thou individual. Today hast thou still thy courage unabated, and thy hopes. But one day will the solitude weary thee. One day will thy pride yield, and thy courage quail. Thou wilt one day cry, I am alone. One day wilt thou see no longer thy loftiness, and see too closely thy lowliness. Thy sublimity itself will frighten thee as a phantom. Thou wilt one day cry, all is false. There are feelings which seek to slay the lonesome one. If they do not succeed, then must they themselves die. But art thou capable of it, to be a murderer? Hast thou ever known, my brother, the word disdain, and the anguish of thy justice in being just to those that disdain thee? Thou forcest many to think differently about thee. That charge they heavily to thine account. Thou camest nigh unto them, and yet wentest past, for that they never forgive thee. Thou goest beyond them, but the higher thou risest, the smaller doth the eye of envy see thee. Most of all, however, is the flying one hated. How could ye be just unto me, must thou say? I choose your injustice as my allotted portion. Injustice and filth cast they at the lonesome one. But, my brother, if thou wouldst be a star, thou must shine for them none the less on that account. And be on thy guard against the good and just. They would fain crucify those who devise their own virtue. They hate the lonesome ones. Be on thy guard also against holy simplicity. All is unholy to it that is not simple. Fain likewise would it play with the fire of the faggot and the stake. And be on thy guard also against the assaults of thy love. Too readily doth the recluse reach his hand to anyone who meeteth him. To many a one mayest thou not give thy hand, but only thy paw, and I wish thy paw also to have claws. But the worst enemy thou canst meet wilt thou thyself always be. Thou waylayest thyself in caverns and forests. Thou lonesome one, thou goest the way to thyself, and past thyself and thy seven devils leadeth thy way. A heretic wilt thou be to thyself, and a wizard and a soothsayer, and a fool and a doubter and a reprobate and a villain. Ready must thou be to burn thyself in thine own flame. How couldst thou become new if thou have not first become ashes? Thou lonesome one, thou goest the way of the creating one. A god wilt thou create for thyself out of thy seven devils. Thou lonesome one, thou goest the way of the loving one. Thou lovest thyself, and on that account despisest thou thyself, as only the loving ones despise. To create desireth the loving one, because he despiseth. What knoweth he of love who hath not been obliged to despise just what he loved? With thy love, go into thine isolation, my brother, and with thy creating, and late only, will justice limp after thee. With my tears, go into thine isolation, my brother. I love him who seeketh to create beyond himself, and thus succumbeth. Thus spake Zarathustra. 18. Old and Young Women. Why stealest thou along so furtively in the twilight, Zarathustra? And what hidest thou so carefully under thy mantle? Is it a treasure that hath been given thee, or a child that hath been born thee? Or goest thou thyself on a thief's errand, thou friend of the evil? Verily, my brother, said Zarathustra, it is a treasure that hath been given me. It is a little truth which I carry. But it is naughty, like a young child, and if I hold not its mouth, it screameth too loudly. As I went on my way alone today, at the hour when the sun declineth, there met me an old woman, and she spake thus unto my soul. Much hath Zarathustra spoken also to us women, but never spake he unto us concerning woman. And I answered her, Concerning woman, one should only talk unto men. Talk also unto me of woman, said she. I am old enough to forget it presently. And I obliged the old woman and spake thus unto her. Everything in woman is a riddle, and everything in woman hath one solution. It is called pregnancy. Man is for woman a means. The purpose is always the child. But what is woman for man? Two different things wanteth the true man, danger and diversion. Therefore wanteth he woman as the most dangerous plaything. Man shall be trained for war and woman for the recreation of the warrior. All else is folly. Two sweet fruits, these the warrior liketh not. Therefore liketh he woman. Bitter is even the sweetest woman. Better than man doth woman understand children, but man is more childish than woman. In the true man there is a child hidden, it wanteth to play. Up, then, ye women, and discover the child in man. A plaything let woman be, pure and fine like the precious stone, illumined with the virtues of a world not yet come. Let the beam of a star shine in your love. Let your hope say, May I bear the Superman. In your love let there be valor. With your love shall ye assail him who inspireth you with fear. In your love be your honor. Little doth woman understand otherwise about honor. But let this be your honor, always to love more than ye are loved, and never be the second. Let man fear woman when she loveth, then maketh she every sacrifice, and everything else she regardeth as worthless. Let man fear woman when she hateth, for man in his innermost soul is merely evil. Woman, however, is mean. Whom hateth woman most? Thus spake the iron to the lodestone. I hate thee most, because thou attractest, but art too weak to draw unto thee. The happiness of man is, I will. The happiness of woman is, he will. Lo, now hath the world become perfect. Thus thinketh every woman when she obeyeth with all her love. Obey must the woman, and find a depth for her surface. Surface is woman's soul, a mobile stormy film on shallow water. Man's soul, however, is deep. Its current gusheth in subterranean caverns. Woman surmiseth its force, but comprehendeth it not. Then answered me the old woman, Many fine things hath Zarathustra said, especially for those who are young enough for them. Strange! Zarathustra knoweth little about woman, and yet he is right about them. Doth this happen because with women nothing is impossible? And now accept a little truth by way of thanks. I am old enough for it. Swaddle it up and hold its mouth. Otherwise it will scream too loudly, the little truth. Give me, woman, thy little truth, said I. And thus spake the old woman. Thou goest to women, do not forget thy whip. Thus spake Zarathustra. 19. The Bite of the Adder. One day had Zarathustra fallen asleep under a fig tree, owing to the heat, with his arms over his face, and there came an adder and bit him in the neck, so that Zarathustra screamed with pain. When he had taken his arm from his face, he looked at the serpent, and then did it recognize the eyes of Zarathustra, wriggled awkwardly, and tried to get away. Not at all, said Zarathustra, as yet hast thou not received my thanks. Thou hast awakened me in time. My journey is yet long. Thy journey is short, said the adder sadly. My poison is fatal. Zarathustra smiled. When did ever a dragon die of a serpent's poison? Said he. But take thy poison back. Thou art not rich enough to present it to me. Then fell the adder again on his neck and licked his wound. When Zarathustra once told this to his disciples, they asked him, And what, O Zarathustra, is the moral of thy story? And Zarathustra answered them thus, The destroyer of morality, the good and just call me. My story is immoral. When, however, ye have an enemy, then return him not good for evil, for that would abash him, but prove that he hath done something good to you. And rather be angry than abash anyone. And when ye are cursed, it pleaseth me not that ye should then desire to bless. Rather curse a little also. And should a great injustice befall you, then do quickly five small ones besides. Hideous to behold is he on whom injustice presseth alone. Did ye ever know this? Shared injustice is half justice, and he who can bear it shall take the injustice upon himself. A small revenge is humaner than no revenge at all, and if the punishment be not also a right and an honour to the transgressor, I do not like your punishing. Nobler is it to own oneself in the wrong than to establish one's right, especially if one be in the right. Only one must be rich enough to do so. I do not like your cold justice. Out of the eye of your judges there always glanceth the executioner and his cold steel. Tell me, where find we justice, which is love with seeing eyes? Devise me then the love which not only beareth all punishment, but also all guilt. Devise me then the justice which acquitteth everyone except the judge. And would ye hear this likewise? To him who seeketh to be just from the heart, even the lie becometh philanthropy. But how could I be just from the heart? How can I give everyone his own? Let this be enough for me. I give unto everyone mine own. Finally, my brethren, guard against doing wrong to any anchorite. How could an anchorite forget? How could he requite? Like a deep well is an anchorite. Easy is it to throw in a stone. If it should sink to the bottom, however, tell me who will bring it out again. Guard against injuring the anchorite. If ye have done so, however, well then, kill him also. Thus spake Zarathustra. 20. Child and Marriage. I have a question for thee alone, my brother. Like a sounding lead, cast I this question into thy soul, that I may know its depth. Thou art young and desirest child and marriage. But I ask thee, art thou a man entitled to desire a child? Art thou the victorious one, the self-conqueror, the ruler of thy passions, the master of thy virtues? Thus do I ask thee. Or doth the animals speak in thy wish, and necessity, or isolation, or discord in thee? I would have thy victory and freedom long for a child, Living monuments shalt thou build to thy victory and emancipation. Beyond thyself shalt thou build, but first of all must thou be built thyself, rectangular in body and soul. Not only onward shalt thou propagate thyself, but upward. For that purpose may the garden of marriage help thee. A higher body shalt thou create, a first movement, a spontaneously rolling wheel, a creating one shalt thou create. Marriage, so call I the will of the twain to create the one that is more than those who created it, the reverence for one another, as those exercising such a will call I marriage. Let this be the significance and the truth of thy marriage, but that which the many too many call marriage, those superfluous ones, what shall I call it? The poverty of soul in the twain, the filth of soul in the twain, the pitiable self-complacency in the twain. Marriage, they call it all, and they say their marriages are made in heaven. Well, I do not like it, that heaven of the superfluous. No, I do not like them, those animals tangled in the heavenly toils. Far from me also be the God who limpeth thither to bless what he hath not matched. Laugh not at such marriages. What child hath not had reason to weep over its parents? Worthy did this man seem, and ripe for the meaning of the earth. But when I saw his wife, the earth seemed to me a home for madcaps. Yea, I would that the earth shook with convulsions when a saint and a goose mate with one another. This one went forth in quest of truth as a hero, and at last got for himself a small decked-up lie. His marriage, he calleth it. That one was reserved in intercourse and chose choicely. But one time he spoilt his company for all time. His marriage, he calleth it. Another sought a handmaid with the virtues of an angel, but all at once he became the handmaid of a woman, and now would he need also to become an angel. Careful have I found all buyers, and all of them have astute eyes, but even the astutest of them buyeth his wife in a sack. Many short follies, that is called love by you, and your marriage putteth an end to many short follies with one long stupidity. Your love to woman, and woman's love to man, would that it was sympathy for suffering and veiled deities, but generally two animals alight on one another. But even your best love is only an enraptured simile and a painful ardour. It is a torch to light you to loftier paths. Beyond yourselves shall ye love some day. Then learn, first of all, to love, and on that account ye had to drink the bitter cup of your love. Bitterness is in the cup even of the best love. Thus doth it cause longing for the Superman. Thus doth it cause thirst in thee, the Creating One. Thirst in the Creating One, arrow and longing for the Superman. Tell me, my brother, is this thy will to marriage? Holy call I such a will, and such a marriage. Thus spake Zarathustra. 21. Voluntary Death. Many die too late, and some die too early. Yet strange soundeth the precept, die at the right time. Die at the right time, so teacheth Zarathustra. To be sure, he who never liveth at the right time, how could he ever die at the right time? Would that he might never be born. Thus do I advise the superfluous ones. But even the superfluous ones make much ado about their death, and even the hollowest nut wanteth to be cracked. Everyone regardeth dying as a great matter, but as yet death is not a festival. Not yet have people learned to inaugurate the finest festivals. The consummating death I show unto you, which becometh a stimulus and promise to the living. His death dieth the consummating one triumphantly, surrounded by hoping and promising ones. Thus should one learn to die, and there should be no festival at which such a dying one doth not consecrate the oaths of the living. Thus to die is best, The next best, however, is to die in battle and sacrifice a great soul. But to the fighter equally hateful as to the victor is your grinning death, which stealeth nigh like a thief, and yet cometh as master. My death praise I unto you, the voluntary death, which cometh unto me because I want it. And when shall I want it? He that hath a goal and an heir wanteth death at the right time for the goal and the heir. And out of reverence for the goal and the heir, he will hang up no more withered wreaths in the sanctuary of life. Verily, not the rope-makers will I resemble. They lengthen out their cord, and thereby go ever backward. Many a one also waxeth too old for his truths and triumphs. A toothless mouth hath no longer the right to every truth. And whoever wanteth to have fame must take leave of honour betimes, and practice the difficult art of going at the right time. One must discontinue being feasted upon when one tasteth best. That is known by those who want to be long loved. Sour apples are there, no doubt, whose lot is to wait until the last day of autumn, and at the same time they become ripe, yellow, and shrivelled. In some ageth the heart first, and in others the spirit, and some are hoary in youth, but the late young keep long young. To many men life is a failure, a poison worm gnaweth at their heart. Then let them see to it that their dying is all the more a success. Many never become sweet, they rot even in the summer. It is cowardice that holdeth them fast to their branches. Far too many live, and far too long hang they on their branches. Would that a storm came and shook all this rottenness and worm-eatenness from the tree. Would that there came preachers of speedy death. Those would be the appropriate storms and agitators of the trees of life. But I hear only slow death preached, and patience with all that is earthly. Ah, ye preach patience with what is earthly? This earthly is it that hath too much patience with you, ye blasphemers. Verily too early died that Hebrew whom the preachers of slow death honour, and to many hath it proved a calamity that he died too early. As yet had he known only tears, and the melancholy of the Hebrews, together with the hatred of the good and just, the Hebrew Jesus. Then was he seized with the longing for death. Had he but remained in the wilderness, and far from the good and just, then perhaps would he have learned to live and love the earth, and laughter also. Believe it, my brethren, he died too early. He himself would have disavowed his doctrine had he attained to my age. Noble enough was he to disavow. But he was still immature. Immaturely loveth the youth, and immaturely also hateth he man and earth. Confined and awkward are still his soul and the wings of his spirit. But in man there is more of the child than in the youth, and less of melancholy. Better understandeth he about life and death. Free for death, and free in death. A holy naysayer, when there is no longer time for yea, thus understandeth he about death and life. That your dying may not be a reproach to man and the earth, my friends, that do I solicit from the honey of your soul. In your dying shall your spirit and your virtue still shine like an evening afterglow around the earth, otherwise your dying hath been unsatisfactory. Thus will I die myself, that ye friends may love the earth more for my sake, and earth will I again become, to have rest in her that bore me. Verily a goal had Zarathustra, he threw his ball. Now be ye friends the heirs of my goal, to you throw I the golden ball. Best of all do I see you, my friends, throw the golden ball, and so tarry I still a little while on the earth. Pardon me for it. Thus spake Zarathustra. 22. The Bestowing Virtue. 1. When Zarathustra had taken leave of the town to which his heart was attached, the name of which is the Pied Cow, there followed him many people who called themselves his disciples, and kept him company. Thus came they to a crossroad. Then Zarathustra told them that he now wanted to go alone, for he was fond of going alone. His disciples, however, presented him at his departure with a staff, on the golden handle of which a serpent twined round the sun. Zarathustra rejoiced on account of the staff, and supported himself thereon. Then spake he thus to his disciples, "Tell me, pray, how came gold to the highest value? Because it is uncommon, and unprofiting, and beaming, and soft in lustre, it always bestoweth itself. Only as image of the highest virtue came gold to the highest value. Gold-like beameth the glance of the bestower. Gold-lustre maketh peace between moon and sun. Uncommon is the highest virtue, and unprofiting, beaming is it, and soft of lustre. A bestowing virtue is the highest virtue. Verily, I divine you well, my disciples. Ye strive, like me, for the bestowing virtue. What should ye have in common with cats and wolves? It is your thirst to become sacrifices and gifts yourselves, and therefore have ye the thirst to accumulate all riches in your soul. Insatiably striveth your soul for treasures and jewels, because your virtue is insatiable in desiring to bestow. Ye constrain all things to flow towards you and into you, so that they shall flow back again out of your fountain as the gifts of your love. Verily, an appropriator of all values must such bestowing love become, but healthy and holy call I this selfishness. Another selfishness is there, an all too poor and hungry kind, which would always steal, the selfishness of the sick, the sickly selfishness. With the eye of the thief it looketh upon all that is lustrous, with the craving of hunger it measureth him who hath abundance, and ever doth it prowl round the tables of bestowers. Sickness speaketh in such craving, and invisible degeneration. Of a sickly body speaketh the larcenous craving of this selfishness. Tell me, my brother, what do we think bad and worst of all? Is it not degeneration? And we always suspect degeneration when the bestowing soul is lacking. Upward goeth our course from genera on to supergenera, but a horror to us is the degenerating sense, which saith, all for myself. Upward soareth our sense, thus is it a simile of our body, a simile of an elevation. Such similes of elevations are the names of the virtues. Thus goeth the body through history, a becomer and fighter, and the spirit, what is it to the body? Its fights and victories herald, its companion and echo. Similes are all names of good and evil. They do not speak out, they only hint. A fool who seeketh knowledge from them. Give heed, my brethren, to every hour when your spirit would speak in similes. There is the origin of your virtue. Elevated is then your body, and raised up. With its delight enraptureth it the spirit, so that it becometh creator, and valuer, and lover, and everything's benefactor. When your heart overfloweth broad and full, like the river, a blessing and a danger to the lowlanders, there is the origin of your virtue. When ye are exalted above praise and blame, and your will would command all things, as a loving one's will, there is the origin of your virtue. When ye despise pleasant things, and the effeminate couch, and cannot couch far enough from the effeminate, there is the origin of your virtue. When ye are willers of one will, and when that change of every need is needful to you, there is the origin of your virtue. Verily a new good and evil is it, verily a new deep murmuring and the voice of a new fountain. Power is it, this new virtue, a ruling thought is it, and around it a subtle soul, a golden sun with the serpent of knowledge around it. 2. Here paused Zarathustra a while, and looked lovingly on his disciples. Then he continued to speak thus, and his voice had changed. Remain true to the earth, my brethren, with the power of your virtue. Let your bestowing love and your knowledge be devoted to be the meaning of the earth. Thus do I pray and conjure you. Let it not fly away from the earthly, and beat against eternal walls with its wings. Ah, there hath always been so much flown away virtue. Lead, like me, the flown away virtue back to earth, yea, back to body and life, that it may give to the earth its meaning, a human meaning. 100 times hitherto hath spirit as well as virtue flown away and blundered. Alas, in our body dwelleth still all this delusion and blundering. Body and will hath it there become. 100 times hitherto hath spirit as well as virtue attempted and erred. Yea, an attempt hath man been. Alas, much ignorance and error hath become embodied in us. Not only the rationality of millenniums, also their madness breaketh out in us. Dangerous is it to be an heir. Still fight we step by step with the giant chance, and over all mankind hath hitherto ruled nonsense, the lack of sense. Let your spirit and your virtue be devoted to the sense of the earth, my brethren. Let the value of everything be determined anew by you. Therefore shall ye be fighters. Therefore shall ye be creators. Intelligently doth the body purify itself. Attempting with intelligence it exalteth itself. To the discerners all impulses sanctify themselves. To the exalted the soul becometh joyful. Physician, heal thyself, then wilt thou also heal thy patient. Let it be his best cure to see with his eyes him who maketh himself whole. 1,000 paths are there which have never yet been trodden, 1,000 salubrities and hidden islands of life. Unexhausted and undiscovered is still man and man's world. Awake and hearken, ye lonesome ones. From the future come winds with stealthy pinions, and to fine ears good tidings are proclaimed. Ye lonesome ones of today, ye seceding ones, ye shall one day be a people. Out of you who have chosen yourselves shall a chosen people arise, and out of it the Superman. Verily a place of healing shall the earth become, and already is a new odour diffused around it, a salvation-bringing odour, and a new hope. 3. When Zarathustra had spoken these words, he paused, like one who had not said his last word, and long did he balance the staff doubtfully in his hand. At last he spake thus, and his voice had changed. I now go alone, my disciples. Ye also now go away, and alone. So will I have it. Verily I advise you, depart from me, and guard yourselves against Zarathustra. And better still, be ashamed of him. Perhaps he hath deceived you. The man of knowledge must be able not only to love his enemies, but also to hate his friends. One requiteth a teacher badly if one remain merely a scholar. And why will ye not pluck at my wreath? Ye venerate me. But what if your veneration should some day collapse? Take heed, lest a statue crush you. Ye say ye believe in Zarathustra? But of what account is Zarathustra? Ye are my believers. But of what account are all believers? Ye had not yet sought yourselves. Then did ye find me. So do all believers. Therefore all belief is of so little account. Now do I bid you lose me and find yourselves, and only when ye have all denied me will I return unto you. Verily, with other eyes, my brethren, shall I then seek my lost ones. With another love shall I then love you. And once again shall ye have become friends unto me, and children of one hope. Then will I be with you for the third time, to celebrate the great noontide with you. And it is the great noontide, when man is in the middle of his course between animal and superman, and celebrateth his advance to the evening as his highest hope, for it is the advance to a new morning. At such time will the down-goer bless himself, that he should be an overgoer, and the sun of his knowledge will be at noontide. Dead are all the gods. Now do we desire the Superman to live. Let this be our final will